according to the laws that God gave to Moshe Rabbeinu, to Moses, if somebody has a portion of land, his sons are inheriting it. And according to that law, women did not get any inheritance of land from their fathers. So there was a person whose name was Tzlafchad, and he had only daughters. The daughters of Tzlafchad come and say, our father passed away in the desert. They make sure to say that he passed away not because of the Korach's rebellion. During the Korach's rebellion that was described just a couple of weeks ago, he was on your side, Moshe, so don't worry about it. He was a good person, but he passed away. And now the question is, why cannot we get his land? So Moshe Rabbeinu says, one second, let me ask. I need to consult the higher authorities. And he asks God, and God says, they are right. Women should be able to inherit land as well if there is no sons who are inheriting it. So now the daughters of Tzlafchad are getting the land of their father. Sounds great, but I want to ask you a question. Why was it that Moshe Rabbeinu had to ask God? God already told him that only men can inherit, women cannot. It seems like Moshe was doubting that God meant what he said, or that he remembered correctly what God said. Well, if Moshe was doubting if he remembered correctly what God said, then maybe we should doubt also everything what Moshe told us, what God told him. In other words, at the end of the day, everything worked out for the best because now we know that women inherit their fathers. That's great. So Torah does not discriminate. But my question is, first of all, why didn't God say it right away? And if God didn't say it right away, why did Moshe feel that he needs to go back to God and ask him? So why didn't God say it right away is answered in our commentaries that there are laws that God would prefer would come from us. There are many laws that God wants to give us, but he knows that we are going to be asking for these laws, and that's why God waits for us to ask. This is throughout the Torah. It says that the daughters of Tzlafchad merited that this law was given specifically through them for specific reasons, and it shows their love for the land of Israel because they wanted to have a portion in that land. So, okay, we figured out why is it that God did not say this law right away, why God had to wait. God has his own ways of doing things, and if he knows that we are going to be asking something, he says, I'll wait for you to ask. But what about Moshe? Moshe went back to God to ask, one second, God, are you sure that's what you meant when you told us this and this? Sounds strange. Moshe didn't do it in any other cases. We don't see any other place in the Torah when Moshe went back to God to make sure that he heard him correctly. Moshe should have just told the daughters of Tzlafchad, I feel for you, I understand your plight, but that's what God told me, sorry. But he didn't. He went back to God to make sure that this would be the law, and God told him, actually, it's not. So it's a little bit strange. In the chapter before that, when the Torah is talking about the whole story of Pinchas, we see another case where Moshe seemed to forget what God told him. Because when Zimri was involved in public displays of inappropriate sexual behavior, Pinchas saw what's going on, and he said that the Jewish law is that when you see something like this going on, you are allowed to take the law into your own hands and kill the people who are doing it. If you see it right at that time, you cannot take the law into your hands. Afterwards, you have to bring them to Jewish court. But at that moment, you are allowed to take the law into your own hands. Just like if you see somebody assaulting someone, you're allowed to take the law into your hands to prevent the assault. If you see somebody about to murder someone, you could kill the assailant. The same thing is here. Inappropriate sexual behavior in Jewish law is likened on many levels to murder. And just like you are allowed to take the law into your own hands if you are witnessing murder which is about to happen. The same thing, inappropriate sexual behavior, and again, inappropriate sexual behavior has a very narrow definition in the Torah. It's not everything that people deem is inappropriate sexual behavior. So now Pinchas sees what's going on and he remembers this law and he's wondering, why is Moshe Rabbeinu Moses just sitting on the sidelines watching what's going on? Pinchas is coming to Moshe and he's asking, one second, isn't this the law? And Moshe said, actually, I think you're right, I forgot. So Pinchas then did exactly what he was confirmed by Moshe is the right thing to do, and he kills those two people. One second, you are telling me that Moshe forgot what God told him? Pinchas remembered it, but Moshe forgot? It seems like Moshe is having some senior moments here. It's a little bit strange to think that Moshe just randomly forgets what God told him. And then if Moshe forgot what God told him in these two instances, how do we know that Moshe didn't forget in other places what God told him? It's a little bit hard to rely on the Torah, which is written down by Moshe, if we see that he has so many memory lapses. So what is the answer? The answer is that it is true that he forgot what the law is, but God made him forget what the law is for a very specific reason. Why is it? In the Jewish law, we have very strict rules about bias opinions. The Jewish approach to bias opinions is much stricter than, let's say, in American civil law or criminal law. In court, there are three people whose opinions matter: a factual witness, an expert witness, and a judge. A factual witness is saying what happened. An expert witness is saying what the laws are. And a judge is making the ruling. We would assume that these three people would be impartial. The defendant is not meant to be impartial. He obviously wants the law to be on his side. The lawyer for the defendant is not meant to be impartial. The accuser is not meant to be impartial. But these three people, a fact witness, an expert witness, and a judge, we would assume should be impartial. In American civil law, in American criminal law, a judge is definitely supposed to be impartial. If we find out the judge has a bias, then he's disqualified. An expert witness is also supposed to be impartial. If you find out that an expert witness who is testifying about the rules, if he has some sort of prejudice, he's going to be disqualified also. But what about a fact witness? In the American judicial system, we have fact witnesses coming up to the witness stand all the time, and they give their testimony. And this fact witness is the wife or the husband of the defendant. And that's his business partner. That's his neighbor. Or the other way around, it's a relative of the accuser. There's no way to assume that a relative or a business partner would be impartial. So the American law says, well, we are putting them up on the witness stand, and it's going to be up to the jury to decide how much weight are they going to give to this testimony based on the fact that this is a relative. In other words, you hear what this witness is going to say, but then we will make our own determination. The problem is that even if the jury or the judge understand that this person is biased and really do not want to give a lot of weight to what they say, the Torah is recognizing that things that are said are already said. Anything which is said is heard. There's no delete button in your memory. So if someone who is very biased is also a very persuasive speaker, he will be able to sway people's opinion in the direction that he wants, even though logically they understand that he is biased. In the Jewish court, a person like this, who is a relative, let's say, would not even be allowed to be put on the stand. You would not be able to have a witness who has a biased opinion. Why is that? And this is for two reasons, actually. Number one, because we do not want them to testify. Even if we take into account that he is a relative, and even if we don't give too much credibility to what he says, we still don't want to testify because we don't want to give any credibility to what he says. This is one reason. But then there's another reason, which is even more interesting. What if during his testimony he will have to say something which is not in favor of the defendant who is his relative? What if during cross-examination some information is going to come up that is going to be not favorable towards the defendant who is his relative, and because of this information, this relative is going to suffer a harsher punishment? The Torah does not want to force a person to speak against his relative. The Torah says it is wrong to have a son or a daughter, a husband or a wife, a mother or a father, to give testimony which is at least in part bad for someone who is close to them. This is the difference between the laws of the Torah and American criminal or civil laws. When we look at the situation of Moshe, we see that he was not impartial in these two cases. Number one, with the daughters of Tzlafchat, they came to him and they asked him, what would be the law in our situation? We think that the law is not fair because we are not getting any land, because our father has passed away. If they would have stopped right there, Moshe would have to answer that question. And he would have to say, you know what? God already told me the law. I know you don't like it, but sorry. But the daughters of Tzlafchat said something else. They said that the story of Korach that just took place, our father was on your side. As soon as they said that, obviously they were trying to just say that their father was a good person and tell him that he did not die because he rebelled against you. But as soon as they said that, Moshe said, I am not impartial anymore. I am recusing myself from judging this case. I am biased. The same thing happened with the story with Pinchas. When this sexual impropriety was taking place, Zimri came over to Moshe Rabbeinu, and Zimri said, ha, you don't want me to have relationship with this woman? Well, guess what? Who did you marry? Your wife is from Midian, which is true. This was a personal attack on Moshe. So then, as soon as that took place, Moshe said, I cannot judge this case. It's true that a person who is in the middle of a prohibited sexual act is allowed to be killed by the Torah, but I cannot, says Moshe, judge whether or not he can be killed right now, because he was also involved in a personal attack on me, and I'm not impartial. That's why I cannot judge whether this is the law or not, and that's why Pinchas had to do it. God made a miracle, and God made sure that in these two cases, Moshe would actually forget what the law is to avoid having him judge these two cases. Because what is written in the Torah is forever. And if these laws would be written as Moshe have implemented them, we would have a doubt, according to the Jewish law, in these rules throughout all the ages. Because we would say, well, Moshe adjudicated this law here, but he was not impartial, so maybe this law is incorrect. That's why God has eliminated the possibility of him making a judgment there, and that's why we had to have these two instances. Why was there the original rule that women do not inherit? This is not because of sexism or discrimination. This is simply because we are talking about land, and land belongs to tribes. If two people get married from different tribes, then the question is, which tribe are you from and where do you live? You cannot have dual citizenship. You cannot be a resident of two states. When I moved to Maryland, I had to give up my New York license. I cannot be official resident of two states. So that's why the law is that the land that was owned by someone is going to be passed on to their sons. And if they have daughters, then these daughters are going to marry someone who is going to have their own inheritance. This was the idea. So now the question is, what if this person does not have any sons and it's only daughters? What's going to be with his land? Is the government going to take it away? So that's why there was a clarification that was given by God at that moment. In this instance, the daughters are going to receive the inheritance of their father. We are used to looking at the ancient world as the world of patriarchy, discrimination. It is true at most part, but not entirely. Why? Because in the Jewish religion, this was never the case. And we live today according to the same laws that our ancestors lived 3,000 years ago by. And these laws today seem to be pretty progressive. The Jewish law back then, thousands of years ago, has instituted ketubah, which is a marriage document which guarantees the right of women. Divorce documents that forced the person to give essentially alimony. We had women who were prophetess. The correct stereotype of majority of ancient cultures does not apply to the Jews. And other cultures have caught up to us over a couple thousand years.